I'm telling these tears go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames.
I want to know, Wisconsin, what duty does the Supreme Court have to you to ensure our freedom, to ensure our democracy? 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. It's not a hypothetical anymore. This isn't a theoretical discussion. What duty does the Supreme Court owe to you, your family, your friends, when it comes to your freedom? 855-75-CIVIC. I want to hear from you. And the reason that this isn't a hypothetical anymore, the reason that this isn't some academic discussion that law professors or talking heads on the radio, like me, simply engage in to hear themselves speak. The reason that this matters to all of us is that every single one of you listening that has a right to vote in the 2024 election has just been likely, nearly certainly deprived of your right to hear the evidence against the former MAGA president relating to the most serious charges that any elected official can ever face. Each and every one of us, I don't care whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, are you not owed the evidence to be heard in a court so that we can all make the most informed decision? What does the Supreme Court of these United States owe you, owe to your family? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. The Supreme Court last night told us all that they are going to hear Donald Trump's claim that he cannot be held responsible criminally for basically anything he did while being president. I want to say that again. The Supreme Court has decided to hear arguments, to take the case up, to take up the former MAGA president's appeal, in which he claims that he can never be held responsible for anything that he has done while president. That he can order SEAL Team 6, if he is president, to assassinate you, to assassinate a member of your family, to lock you up for any reason whatsoever, legal or illegal, and that even if that is a crime by any meaningful standard under our laws, that he can never be held criminally responsible. That's the question that the Supreme Court thinks they need to weigh in on. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. And the timing of the Supreme Court's, even the basic decision that, to take up this argument, which they didn't need to because an appeals court found in a comprehensive, blistering opinion that that argument that presidents can do whatever the hell they want, commit any crime they want, kill you, your family, overturn our democracy and never be held accountable in a court of law in these United States. The appeals court said that's ridiculous. The trial court said we don't have kings, we don't have sovereigns, that every man and woman in this country is under the law, is subject to the law. What does the Supreme Court owe you? Because I don't think they owe us a damn thing. And I'm going to tell you all the details about this today. You're going to know more than any of your friends. I'm going to tell you what this means when we, the people, do not have the opportunity that our right is deprived of us to hear the evidence against the former MAGA president. And let me flip it on its head, the other side of this coin. For those that believe that this is a political persecution, you too are being deprived of the right for Mr. Trump to prove his innocence. What does the Supreme Court owe all of us? Because they certainly do not seem to be accountable to a damn person on this, on our continent. We got the phones lighting up. If you want to join us, we're going to go right into the phones. I'm going to continue to explain this because I don't know. Apparently, the Supreme Court thinks that they are above all and that they can anoint a king in these United States. Cindy from Appleton, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. What say you? What does the Supreme Court owe you?
Well, they owe me the right to follow the letter of the law, the Constitution, and not to be partisan. And obviously, this is very partisan because, excuse me, they're going to let him off with nothing? Give me a break. If I don't even pay my taxes for a couple of years, they come looking for me. I mean, this is ludicrous.
Couldn't agree with you more, Cindy. Thanks for the call. Keep listening. Here's why this is effectively letting him off the hook. Donald J. Trump's trial for trying to overthrow democracy was scheduled to start next week, folks, March 4th. That was the trial date. And it would have provided each of us, no matter what you believe about those charges, no matter what we think about the righteousness or the goodness of the policies of Mr. Trump, would have given each of us a chance to evaluate the evidence. It would have allowed him to try to prove his innocence before a jury of his peers. And what the Supreme Court has done, they didn't need to take the case. They could have simply denied the request to hear the case, left the appeals court judgment in place, which is, no, we don't have kings, we don't have sovereigns, everyone's subject to the law. What I thought was a pretty fundamental principle of our democracy. Could have left that in place. Instead, they waited nearly 3 weeks to decide whether or not to take up the case. Why is that a long time? Because in the Colorado ballot appeal, it took them 2 days after briefs were filed to take up the Colorado case. And they scheduled oral arguments in the Colorado ballot case within 2 weeks of agreeing to take up the case. In contrast here, Colorado, 2 days before agreeing to take the case. This case, the criminal overthrow of democracy charges, 3 weeks to decide. In Colorado, they scheduled oral arguments 2 weeks after agreeing to take up the case. Here, 7 weeks. They will not hear argument in this case until April. Their term ends in June. And Donald Trump has been promised, as he is due, an appropriate amount of time to prepare his case by the trial judge, Judge Chutkan. That is at least 82 days. It takes about 30 days to screen jurors. We ain't going to hear the evidence against Mr. Trump before the election. Gary from Sussex, what do you have to say?
Well, Maggie, I'm a conservative Republican, and I support Donald Trump. He may not be the person that I would like to be our candidate. I wish they would throw both of them out and start over again with some fresh faces. But this is the way it is. Now, as far as the Supreme Court, it sounds like you think that they're going to rule in his favor. But we should all be happy that it's going to the Supreme Court, because whenever they rule, that's going to be the law.
So here's why not. First of all, no one thinks Trump's argument will succeed fully on its merits. No one, no legal scholar, even the most federal society, right-leaning conservative legal scholars, agree with Trump's fundamental argument that he can do whatever he wants while he's president and he can never be charged. And by the way, history here, Nixon was pardoned by Ford for official acts Nixon undertook during his presidency. So everyone has always operated on the premise that if a president commits crimes, he can be punished for them. And isn't that what we all deserve? My argument here isn't that the Supreme Court is going to find that Mr. Trump is mostly or even completely right. My point here is that the Supreme Court, in a nakedly partisan way, has dragged their feet. It only takes four of the justices on the Supreme Court to decide to take up a case. Trump stacked the court with three handpicked appointees straight out of the Federalist Society top 10 list. And by doing so, one of which he wasn't entitled to because the Senate refused to schedule confirmation hearings for Mr. Merrick Garland when Antonin Scalia died and Obama appointed Merrick Garland, that this partisan patronage Supreme Court is intentionally dragging their feet, and they know the calendar. They know the DOJ policy that says active steps in an investigation shall not take place within 60 days of an election cycle. And by delaying this, they are delaying the trial of the president until after his election. And if he were to win, his first act on January 20th of 2025 would be to shut down his criminal prosecutions, both of them, the documents case and the January 6th case. That's why nobody thinks, Gary, that presidents are kings. Keith from Middleton, you're on the air. What do you have to say?
Hi, Maggie. First of all, welcome. My first time hearing you. I was a big follower of Matt before.
Thanks for calling, Keith. I appreciate you listening.
So not to be too flip about this, but I'm not overly concerned about this because, as you said, there's no way that they're going to side with him and say he has immunity. The thing I heard this morning that really cracked me up was that the judgment was that it's an official act. It's like, okay, what official act are we talking about? Are we really talking about insurrection as an official act?
Right? The overthrow of democracy is a president's official act? Come on now. Keep listening, everybody. If you are on the lines, I will get there. 855-75-CIVIC. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. You cannot miss what is coming next, folks. Keep it locked. What, folks, even Lizzo can't make me feel good today because I don't know what is up with this Supreme Court. The naked partisanship, the totally obvious foot dragging is simply inexcusable, especially when you stack up the timeline with the Colorado case. Americans, all of us, conservative, democratic, independent, we all deserve to hear the evidence on a criminal case that has never been brought against a president. Nothing of this kind ever have we seen in our history. Gene from Eau Claire, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. What do you have to say?
Well, thank you so much for covering this topic. I'll tell you, smoke's coming out of my house. It's coming out of my ears. I can't believe this. I'm 69, and I've never seen this in my life. I paid attention to my government for many years. This is outrageous. It was a crime of the century. And the thing that really bugs me more than anything is the Supreme Court and how it was loaded. And I don't know, how do we fight back? I wish the Bar Association would all sign petitions and say, hey, this ain't the rule of law. I mean, this really reduces the credibility of all legal decisions in our country, and it makes us look like a bunch of fools for the world, and it's unbelievable, Banky. I feel like you do. It is outrageous. It is sick, and every one of those justices that said we need to do this. Oh, and also, I think, didn't they change the scope by the the way that they focused on a certain question.
They sure did, Gene. Boy, you're actually paying attention to the news. Two questions in there from Jean, and I'm going to get to all of them. Her first question is, what do we do about it as Americans? Again, Republican, Democratic, Independent. I hate this stuff. All politicians are the same. You deserve to hear the facts, the actual evidence. And the Supreme Court just deprived you of that right. Speedy trials are not just for defendants. The speedy trial is for the public. If you believe he's innocent, you should want the trial, too. And these four or five or six justices, and by the way, they're one-page order, which I have. They don't tell you what the vote was, and they don't tell you who voted which way. If you want to know more about that, go check out the podcast on civicmedia.us for my show. In December, I told you all about the shadow docket. There has never been a Supreme Court as powerful as this Supreme Court. And their power has gone unchecked. And here's what. All due respect to my friend who called in and said, I don't think this is a big deal. And thanks for listening. I loved Matt Flynn. Here I am. Please listen to me too. Give me a shot, everybody. Here's what. It does matter. According to a Bloomberg Morning Consult poll released in February, 53% of voters are very or somewhat unwilling to vote for Trump if he's convicted of a crime. 55% would be unwilling to vote for him if he's sentenced to prison. The Yahoo News and YouGov poll, also released in February, found 58% of respondents believed a conviction for conspiring to overturn election results would make a candidate, quote, unfit for the presidency. And Eileen Cannon, the judge hearing the documents case, a Trump appointee and largely a legal nincompoop who has no business sitting as a lifetime appointee to a federal court. I have better credentials than she does. She's going to hold her case, too. There's a hearing tomorrow to set the trial schedule. What do you think she's going to do tomorrow? I mean, come on, man. Wisco Paul, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Nice call, Jeannie. Thanks for taking my call, Maggie. The Supreme Court is corrupt. We know three of them for sure are. One's wife participated in the J6 riot, I can call it, overthrow of the government. It's just a sad day, and I'm pretty upset about it. And I'll listen to you to see what we can do about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Yeah, again, let's look at history here, folks, right? What happened during U.S. v. Nixon? Rehnquist recused himself. Anybody think Clarence Thomas is going to recuse himself? Because his wife was texting Mark Meadows, the chief of staff, saying, yes, Mike Pence should refuse to certify the election results, should participate in the conspiracy. He ain't recusing himself. Clarence Thomas is the most ethically compromised Supreme Court justice in modern American history. He ain't going to do squat. Jesse from Madison, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Thanks for taking my call, Maggie. I love the network and everyone else on it, but you are the shining brightest legal mind ever to be on the network, and I thank you for what you're doing. I'll just
thank you.
This. We need to do two things if we want to preserve our republic. And I know it sucks that we've gotten to this place where every time we say something like that, it sounds apoplectic, but seriously and legitimately, we need to do these two things. One is, you know, love him or don't love him, Joe Biden has to be reelected president, and we need to take the House back and keep the Senate. And two, once that happens, we need to blow up the filibuster and expand the Supreme Court. End of story. There is no way that anyone with an objective viewpoint can say that the Supreme Court is anything except for an overtly partisan rigged court. And historically, there's been one justice for every federal district. Doesn't that mean we should be having like 16 justices on the Supreme Court right now?
Yeah, great, great points, Jesse. Couldn't agree with you more. I go through the entire history of the Supreme Court. Go check out the podcast and past episodes. Maybe you'll do a little like refresher revisit, but they're all there for you. I go through the history of the court, how we got here, the way that these justices have wielded extraordinary power in the shadow docket, which is unattributable, they're unaccountable, they don't have to say who voted for what, is scary. It used to be just used for death penalty appeals. It used to be just habeas. Ain't so anymore. Jack from Merrimack, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. What you got to say?
Well, first thing I want to say is that if there's any doubt that at least four just so-called justices on this Supreme Court are totally corrupt, this should end that doubt. This smacks of what Netanyahu did in Israel when he basically got to change the structure of their Supreme Court, and all of a sudden, all of his legal charges just sort of went away. And this is pretty obviously the direction that Trump wants to go. It's just an absolute travesty, and I'm in agreement with a couple of your other callers, which is we've got to, first of all, get enough people in Congress to change the structure of the Supreme Court. We have to add justices. But I also think that there may be another approach. And what do you think of this, since you're a much better legal mind than I am? Is it not possible that Congress could legislate if we get a strong enough presence in the Congress, that they could legislate a slight change in the Supreme Court structure?
So I got to cut you off there. We're going to be back with State Representative Evan Goyke. Talk about brilliant lawyers. Evan's going to be joining me. I'm going to answer all your questions, perhaps with Evan, perhaps in the later portion of the show. What do we do about it? How do we fix the Supreme Court?
This is my palace, champagne in my chalice. I got it all covered like a wedding band, wonderland, so my...
What's up, Wisconsin? Welcome back. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. I am joined now in the studio by State Representative Evan Goyke. Welcome, Evan.
Thanks for having me.
So excited.
Congratulations on the new gig and new job and everything. It's exciting to be here.
Thank you. We're trying to figure out your... Let me see if I turn me. I'm trying to figure out your camera. Okay, so I've been talking about the Supreme Court's taking up Trump's case. We're going to get to that because you are a lawyer, fellow juris doctor, and lots to talk about there. So, folks, if you've been interested in that topic, we're going to stay on it. All the questions that folks had in this first half of the hour, I will be answering in the back end of my show. You're not going to want to miss a minute of it. I'm also going to paint you the picture. I'm going to extrapolate what happens potentially because of this partisan, patronage-loaded Supreme Court. Where do we end up? And that's because, honestly, that's what really scares me. But right now, I want to talk to you, Evan, about your current campaign, where you've been, what you're doing next. So you've been in the state legislature for a goodly amount of time.
Yeah, 11 years.
Yeah, that's been an interesting time.
It's enough.
To be a Democrat in the state in the state assembly. You've been working really hard. What were some of the biggest accomplishments or things that at least you feel like you got out there and some awareness from the public regarding to, even though we had this very gerrymandered and Republican controlled legislature?
Well, yeah, it was a difficult decade to serve in the minority, but I hope my legacy and what I'm most proud of is is we begun efforts on criminal justice reform, juvenile justice reform, tough topic, but we've had some bipartisan successes there. I really...
Now, when you say, if I can,
yeah,
tell people what you mean by criminal justice reform and juvenile justice reform.
Yeah, it's... Thank you, Maggie, because if you were a listener in almost every state in this country, you'd be familiar with these policies because they've been enacted in red states and blue states, but not here. You know, we have an overcrowded prison system. We have the legal structures that are in effect that lead to that. Have not been updated to reflect better data and better social science and better public policy. So, you know, we have also one of the most racially disparate criminal justice systems. Incarceration of black men in Wisconsin is, if not the leading, you know, most disparate state in the nation, one of them. And
what's interesting to me, again, and you've done so much work on this, is that courts, judges, and district attorneys are not required to report data on these things.
Yeah, and here's the thing that drives me crazy
like,
about this. Here's what drives me crazy. Are we safer?
There's right. never really this. Is it working?
Is it working? There's really no inherent check other than, you know, elections and campaigns. And we don't really have any kind of trusted source that says this policy worked or that policy worked. And I live in a neighborhood on the north side of Milwaukee that has, it's kind of a high crime neighborhood and a high incarceration area. We kind of have mm-hmm. both. And my neighbors and I, we just want to get it right. We just want to, you know, I'm not an abolitionist in any sense of the word. I just want to do what's right that will have the greatest likelihood of making us all safer and rehabilitate people so that when they come out, they're never going to commit crime again. And I'm proud that we've had some successes. Last week, we were on the floor of the assembly and we passed what could be, if the state Senate gets their act together and passes it, the most meaningful reform that to date, really about how people re-enter from prison as well mm-hmm. as how people access second chances in court, because we're really an outlier in both areas. You look around the country and other states are just investing in people, and we just really haven't done that.
Yeah, when you don't, if our outcome is less crime, safer neighborhoods, greater overall wellness in our neighborhoods, that folks who have made mistakes, sometimes serious mistakes, that they have a pathway to become productive citizens, you know, putting the air quotes up on that. You got to invest in these sorts of things. Locking people up just locks them up for that period of time. And when I mentioned that we don't track any of that data, we don't track how prosecutors charge, how the charges result in plea bargaining. In fact, one of my guest hosts at the end of March is going to be talking about both the conservative and liberal case against plea bargaining, because conservatives and liberals hate plea bargaining. We don't track how judges sentence, none of the demography around that.
Right, right. And it's
shocking.
Kind of a black hole. And, you know, it's crime is real. I'm not saying there shouldn't be consequences. I'm not an advocate for no accountability and no consequences, but let's get our money's worth. We spend well over $1.5 billion a year in just the prison side of things, not to mention, you know, courts and police and all of that. And nobody really comes back and says, what's the value proposition of this system? And so I've tried to bring that. And, you know, I've also tried to shine a real light on Milwaukee. There are a lot of people that serve in the state legislature that, you know, really don't know the city at all, and they've never been there.
They do.
Oh, they've got opinions about how we should govern ourselves or how they should govern us.
Right.
But they've never really been there. So I've tried really hard over the years opening my home. I've had, I don't know, maybe 20 different Republicans over to my house, walked the neighborhood,
awesome.
Tried to really show them what life is like and what really, Maggie, what you find is everybody's the same. They want the same stuff. We're not very different on the north side of Milwaukee as we are from Reedsburg, where my colleague recently was down in Milwaukee. And so finding those commonalities and being able to work together, that's my, you know, what I hope my legacy is as I leave. Boy, do I wish we could have gotten more done. You know, part of why I'm excited to take on a new challenge is because the legislature has been so hopelessly broken the last dozen years. It's really prevented meaningful work from getting done.
When we reflect on Wisconsin legislative accomplishments or legislative functionality, right, just as an objective measure.
Yeah, just the
measure,
culture, how it's
right.
working. Yeah.
Is it working? Forget whether you're passing liberal or more conservative policies. When we look at that after Scott Walker, In other words, when we had the majority of Wisconsinites electing our governor, very little got done.
Oh, yeah. And I'll tell you, like, I can give you a front row seat. It's not a happy place right now. And I'm not just saying that as a disgruntled Democrat. I'm saying, I'll tell you, my Republican colleagues, when I talk to them, there's this winner-take-all mentality. And so even the Republicans are not taking on really new cutting-edge policy because we can't give Tony Evers a win, can't get legislative Democrats a win. We'd rather not do something. We'd rather fail and have inaction than give a Democratic governor credit for it. And, you know, let's be honest, sometimes the Democrats act in much the same way. And it is really frustrating that our system is kind of stuck in this, winner-take-all, standoff-type partisan divide.
It's such an echo of what's going on in Washington, right? We're looking at basically the former MAGA president saying, well, don't pass any meaningful immigration legislation because I want to run on it. And up and down GOP leadership, they all salute.
Well, and let me tell you.
And nothing happens.
There was legislation written by Republicans to allow DACA recipients, so deferred action childhood arrivals, right? They're under really strict scrutiny and supervision of the federal government to get DACA. It's not easy. They cannot, DACA recipients cannot become licensed professionals. So you can't hold. And you know where this came from? You can't be a lawyer. You can't be a cop. You can't be, just a 200
a nurse,
plus. Yeah.
A doctor.
And we have these huge shortages in many of these areas. And the Republican legislature, some of them, those kind of mega extremists, are refusing to bring those bills to a vote. Every Democrat would support it. A majority of the legislature would support it. They would pass. But a small minority can kind of take over their party. And it is fidelity to Trump. It is fidelity to, arguing about immigration in the 2024 election. And what really drives me crazy is that lost in the wash are these really hardworking people who can't pursue their dreams because when they were 2 years old,
their parents came here,
all they did was work their ass off through college and, high school and college to get to a position where they could earn this treatment, this DACA treatment, and they want to give back to their community and they can't because they can't get a license. Republican bill blocked by MAGA Republicans.
Yep. That's incredible. And again, I want to emphasize the fact that it was a Republican bill brought by moderates to go get something done because we have to get something done to help solve some of these labor shortage problems and blocked by an extreme faction of a party,
the
right?
wing of their party.
And we've seen that here in Wisconsin as well, right? With the Elections Commission, almost ad nauseum. Today, folks, we're going to talk with Representative Goyke, not just about his legislative accomplishments, his interest areas as a legislator under the most extreme and difficult circumstances here in gerrymandered Wisconsin. We're going to talk to him about maps. We're going to talk to him about why he wants to be the city attorney of Milwaukee. We're going to talk about his thoughts and some of the public record of his opponent, because I think that's really critical. We began the show today by talking about what I'm going to call the abrogation of their constitutional and public service duty by the Supreme Court to basically, if you're going to take the case, move with all due haste and alacrity so that the American public is treated with some respect, is treated with the respect that we deserve so we can hear the facts and have them presented in a courtroom. We're going to talk about what that means to you, Mr. Goyke, and your views about what that may or may not mean to the incumbent city attorney whom you're running against, because these ideas of what it means to serve and what it means to serve self, right? To serve others or to serve self. Those are questions that got to be asked at every single level of government. And when you talk about these technical positions like a city attorney or a corporation counsel for Milwaukee County or a comptroller, competency and ethics and that sense of duty is really of penultimate importance.
I totally agree. So,
We've got just a few minutes left. If you want to ask Representative Goyke, candidate for City of Milwaukee City Attorney, some questions, by all means, give us a buzz. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. And if you're in a smaller jurisdiction, you're upstate, hey, this is for you too, because you got a shot to ask. You got two lawyers on the horn here. You got a shot to ask us about public service, about being a public servant, what this means. I'm on my way out of my public service job into a private sector job. You're leaving one version of public service and attempting to come down to the local level, but in a much more visible leadership role. What made you think, I want to, you know, the MAPS case was percolating, and yeah, and you decided to run for city attorney?
And I decided a long time ago. I've worked with this office in the past, and my real inspiration was a couple of years ago working with assistant city attorneys to deal with a high crime property in my neighborhood on the corner of 27th and Kilbourne. And I got to know some of these assistant city attorneys, and it was so cool, the job they were doing, Maggie. And you know it. You've been there.
Yep.
Listening to residents, working with residents and stakeholders, the police department, the alders, to solve real-world problems. They were trying to help us make our community safer. And they were trying in court. And they came to me as a state representative because there was a loophole, and we ended up closing it. It's kind of a long an involved story, but I got to know some of this.
Yeah,
getting real nerdy over here about how the loophole we closed. But the important part is that we did that, and I watched these guys solve problems. It was great.
That's so critical. Solving the problems, serving others, not self. We're going to be back with Representative Evan Goyke, current candidate for the City of Milwaukee City Attorney. After these important messages, if you have a question about public service, public servants, why we do this work, 855-75-CIVIC, here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're talking about what it means to serve, why people go into public service, why folks run for election, and once you win those seats, what it means when you take an oath and actually say that you're going to put service to others above service of self. I'm joined by my friend and Civic Media's friend, Representative Evan Goyke, who is a current candidate for the City of Milwaukee Comptroller's Office, that election coming up.
City attorneys.
Yep. Both of the elections are happening. Yep. Yep. Listen, the money folks and the legal folks in every organization, very important if I do say myself. That election's coming up on April 2nd. Representative Goyke spent 11 years in the state legislature, maybe brutal years.
Some of them were very brutal.
Brutal years. Yeah. Looking onward and upward, why do you want to be city attorney? What's your platform? What do you want to get done?
When we went to break, we were talking about the impact of the city attorney's office on public safety in my own neighborhood. And I think that that's top of mind for most residents of the city. You know, we're not going to be a prosperous city if we're not safe. And that's every neighborhood. The city attorneys, we're the prosecutors in municipal court. And so any municipal violation goes, you know, through the city attorney's office, and the real portfolio that I want to target is driving.
Can you explain really briefly, and I want to return to the driving question and the reckless driving argument. What's the difference between municipal court citations and prosecution and what people typically understand as prosecution?
Yeah, it's easy to throw it all into one kind of basket. A municipal citation is a money-only penalty where there isn't incarceration as a consequence. So we're not prosecuting crimes. That also triggers a constitutional right to counsel. Those are in the county courthouse charged by the district attorney, which I am not running for. The city attorney
is
different.
Not the DA.
This is, if you're thinking of downtown Milwaukee, it's the police administration building by MATC, not the big fancy marble courthouse. But there's some connections between the two and communications between the two. You know, and so it's all levels of municipal infractions. So a parking ticket all the way up to building code violations and, you know, issues with license holders can be pretty broad. The municipal code is, you know, there's a lot of ways that you could find yourself in violation of, you know, not shoveling or taking out garbage or speeding or reckless driving and
hoarding.
Yes, that's right. So there's no shortage of interesting cases that go through municipal court. There are three branches open 5 days a week, and it's a busy place. And so really we want to focus on combating reckless driving. And it's a really difficult, challenging issue to solve. A multifaceted approach to solve this. We finally in Madison got done a bill this year, bipartisan bill, to bring back driver's education in school for free, which is a huge part of the equation.
I had it in my high school.
Yeah, I did. I mean, it was a rite of passage. It wasn't a question when I was growing up. But, you know, and then you can see visibly a number of the physical changes that the city has undergone to make streets safer and to
traffic calming.
Yes. And so that's a part as well. And so, too, is enforcement. And that's where city attorney's office comes in. And I'm really interested in focusing on repeat drivers, bad drivers. There's existing tools that we can use to hold these people more accountable. I think at some point we can't be paralyzed by the what if scenarios of, you know, people always say, well, the car might be stolen or there weren't plates. So let's not try to do some kind of new intervention, because we'll deal with those scenarios as we find ourselves there. But we need to have real consequences for repeat bad drivers. Just give you an example. If you were, you know, speeding today, your court date would be probably 2, 3, 4 months from now. Oh. And you and I both know, is that individual really going to show up 3 months later? Are they taking that seriously? So I want to look into, can we expedite the repeated bad drivers to get them in and through faster? Can we be more creative in what we do? Can we take their vehicles? Can we impound their vehicles? Can we show that there's some real consequences? I want to do that surgically. I don't want to take away someone's car if they're not really the problem. And, right. And we also in municipal court, we are the largest source of driver's license suspensions. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes that's people that get a ticket or a second ticket, but they're not the, you know,
they're
real
not the
danger.
Actual problem.
Yeah. Know. So I'm not just advocating for a heavier hammer. Sometimes that's warranted, but we also need to make sure that we're not entrapping people into a system and be making them unlicensed drivers, putting them further into the margins. And so, you know, municipal court, Maggie, earlier you said, you know, you were talking about these positions like corp counsel or city attorney that are a little bit more buried, right? You probably shouldn't know who the city attorney is, right? That's kind of a bad thing that we know who the current city attorney is. Municipal court is one of those areas where, you know, not the public does not know a lot of what's going on. The press doesn't cover it. It's not very accessible. And I want to really change that and shine a light on it. We can be far more effective in how we prosecute crimes, municipal violations at municipal court.
Yeah, it's one of the things that I have the deepest respect for you regarding, Evan, is the fact that what you just said was nuanced.
Yeah. Thank you. It is. Life is nuanced.
Yeah.
Not everybody that comes in front of a court is exact, you know. And I don't want to make things worse for people that are trying really hard to get by. And I don't want to just pass the buck and shuffle paper if somebody's really causing a problem out there. We're going to hold them accountable. And I think we're smart enough to tell the difference between the two.
Or at least to try.
Yes, that's right. We just
have
to focus.
Let's try. Thanks so much. Can you stick around for a little bit longer?
Let's hang out.
Wonderful. I love it. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. Give a call. Ask me or Evan Goyke a question. He's been a state representative for 11 years, current candidate for the city of Milwaukee, city attorney. That election is coming up on April 2nd. When we come back, you've been hearing about a couple of the issues that Evan is passionate about. He's going to talk a little bit about housing, but we also would be remiss if we're talking about holding elected officials accountable, if we're talking about public service instead of service of self, transparency, ethics, we would be remiss, and I would be remiss if I didn't give Evan a chance to address the record of the current sitting city attorney. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you are on the phone, stay there. We will get to you. 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Yeah, it's like